Welcome to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole Hagen, a nutrition coach, entrepreneur, food freedom expert, and forever a recovering disordered eater. I am here to help you own your enoughness, find your very own food freedom, and achieve your health and wellness goals in a way that gives more than it takes. Each week, I will provide you with insight and inspiration surrounding no-nonsense nutrition, mindset, motivation, body image, confidence, and other wellness wisdom. Welcome back, my friend, to another episode of the Nutrition and Podcast series that we are kicking off 2021 with here on the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you've been following along, you've heard us talk already about the powerful role that nutrition plays in diabetes, PCOS, cancer, and today we have another fantastic episode for you talking about heart disease. That's right, that very important organ living inside of your chest. What you eat, how you live, and the things that you do or don't do play a big, big, big role in how healthy your heart is. And today, Dr. Natasha Fonseca is going to talk to us about the advice that she shares with her patients as a 3 times board certified cardiologist to ensure that they are minimizing their risk for future heart complications. I can't wait for you to hear what Dr. Fonseca has to share with us in today's episode. As always, if you love what you hear, if you learn something from it, please share a screenshot of today's podcast episode to your social media stories. Sharing is caring, especially when it comes to no-nonsense nutrition and lifestyle advice that will keep your heart healthy. I would love to welcome you, Dr. Fonseca, to the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Nicole. You are doing such a wonderful service by helping a lot of people get healthy, and thank you for allowing me to be part of the process.
I can't wait for you to share a ton of your knowledge and education with myself and for those listening. But before we dive into the nitty-gritty and all of these special details, I just want you to give us a little background on you. So who are you? What do you do? And where do you live?
Perfect. So my name is Natasha Fonseca, and I'm a medical doctor. So I have an MD after my name. I completed 4 years of medical school, 4 years of internal medicine training, and then I went on to specialize in cardiology, which is 3 more years of intense training. So I have trained for 10 years post-college to be able to practice as a cardiologist. And I have a special interest in preventive medicine. I practice what I preach. I'm able to connect with my patients because I myself see why sometimes I fail at being healthy, and I feel like I can relate to my patients a little bit better. When I listened to your podcast, I heard that you struggle with weight and eating issues, and so have I. And that makes me more interested in preventive medicine because I feel like I understand why it's hard and why you need sometimes a coach or somebody to champion for you, like cheerleader in your corner. So that's sort of my background. In terms of, being a physician and preventive medicine, I know a lot of doctors have interest in preventive medicine. I mean, that's really our basis of our education, but not everybody has the resources or the tools to be able to provide that service. As we talked about, your job is to really be their champion, to have constant communication, constant talking. And a lot of doctors just don't have the resources to do that because most of them are employed by, health systems that maybe doesn't allow long conversations like this. So what you're doing is truly, truly, important to patients and for people.
I think it's definitely more impactful, and I think many people can relate in some way, shape, or form when we have that personal experience, because yes, as a provider, you're not just telling or teaching, you're empathizing with your patient or with my clients because we've been there. So I love that you felt comfortable sharing that. And I know that we have something in common in that we have a Philly connection. So where are you practicing?
Oh my gosh, I forgot to mention. Yes, I practice in Flourtown, Pennsylvania. I trained in Philly. I trained at Temple. So I've been in Philly for the last 10 years or so. Because of telemedicine now, I am able to see patients all throughout Pennsylvania. But my practice is, in Flourtown, which is a really cute city in the suburbs of Philadelphia.
And I love seeing that on Instagram, one of the many ways that we connected. And I was like, oh, yeah, kindred spirits. This is fun. But let's dive straight in because I know we have so much that we want to talk about. This podcast series that I'm doing right now is to help our listeners understand that nutrition is so powerful and so far-reaching beyond just helping with weight loss. Because I think so many people misguidedly believe that, oh, well, I only need to eat well or worry about my health or my nutrition if I'm trying to lose weight. And you and I both know that that is not the case. And nutrition can help with healthy, sustainable weight loss, but it is so much more powerful than that and can have huge healthy impacts on longevity and long-term chronic disease prevention, talking about preventative care. So you are here featured as our heart health expert. So we want to pick your brain and just kind of discuss how nutrition and lifestyle habits in general play a role in our heart health. So before we talk about how nutrition is connected to heart health, let's just talk about heart disease. So can you tell us what it is? Because I know there's a lot encompassed in that health complication.
You're right. So heart disease is truly an umbrella term to describe everything related to your heart. So when we talk about heart blockages or heart attacks or needing a heart stent, for example, we're talking about coronary artery disease or atherosclerosis or plaque buildup in your heart arteries. I think one of the frustrating parts about, you know, people or patients learning about heart disease is there's so many different terms and terminologies and it gets really confusing. So imagine how life was for me in medical school because everything had multiple names and multiple descriptions. But moving on to, for example, high blood pressure, we call that hypertension. High cholesterol, we call that hyperlipidemia. Arrhythmias, in terms of nutrition, atrial fibrillation, which is a very common arrhythmia issue affecting 3 to 4 million people, you know, living in America, for example. Heart valve issues. Some heart valve issues you could be born with or some you can acquire late in life. Heart failure. Those are the main diagnoses that really fall under the umbrella of heart disease. And let me tell you, all of these conditions could be managed, improved, avoided by help being healthy. And being healthy and nutrition really start at a young age. So when I have patients who, let's say, have a heart blockage, some of them get really kind of disappointed when they, you know, when they hear they have a blockage or they need a stent because they say, well, I just became vegan last year. You know, I've been eating healthy for the last 6 months. The problem is that the blockages, the plaque buildup likely started in your 30s, 40s, 50s, you know? So when you're at age 60, which may sound like old if your listeners are young, but I'm telling you, all my 60, 70, 80, 90-year-olds, they feel young. And some of my 90-year-olds are even playing singles tennis. I mean, play golf, martini night. They have Zoom martini dates now that it's the pandemic. Listen, you are going everybody wants to live a very fulfilling, healthy life. There is really no upper limit to, you know, what we define as throwing in the towel. There's none of that. So all of these heart conditions, again, the blocked arteries, high cholesterol, high blood pressure, even arrhythmias such as atrial fibrillation, heart failure, they all could be either prevented or managed with nutrition. So this is absolutely a very important topic to talk about.
Big umbrella that encompasses a lot of those diagnoses that you just walked us through. And you mentioned two things, blood pressure and cholesterol. Would you say that those are two of the markers that a physician might use to raise concern about future heart disease? Like for someone who's seemingly healthy, maybe on the younger end of the spectrum, how do blood pressure and cholesterol play into future heart disease?
Perfect question. High blood pressure and high cholesterol are what we call silent killers, okay? You don't know you have them until things are a little too late. So some people tell me, I know my blood pressure is high because I got a headache, or they can hear their heartbeat in their ear. By that time, blood pressure is like through the roof, okay? So one of the things that's frustrating about healthcare in America is that a lot of people really can't go to the doctor because of high copays, lack of insurance, what have you, which is just a really tragic, in my opinion, because high blood pressure, high cholesterol are risk factors for heart disease, risk factors for arrhythmias, risk factors for heart failure. So you see how all of that stuff is really connected. Coronary artery disease, that's the blockages in the heart, or atrial fibrillation can cause heart failure. So not only did I just mention like what, 6-7 diagnoses, I'm telling you how they're all interrelated and how one thing could really trigger a cascade of bad stuff. So getting blood pressure under control or living as healthy as you possibly can in your 20s, 30s, 40s, that really translates to higher chance of you being able to avoid bad stuff. Bad stuff being heart attack, stroke, death. Okay. Now it's not 100% because there's a lot of genetic and environmental factors. You know, there's a Sri Lankan urologist who I met, you know, earlier this year, healthy, active, apparently biked all the time, you know, very fit looking, life of the party. He had a massive, what we think is a heart attack, and passed away like that. And why? Because genetics play a role, and Southeast Asians, such as myself, were at a higher risk. Sometimes you just cannot avoid your genes, your genetic markup, you know, what runs in your family. So, but the way we make sure that we live long, happy lives is making sure that the chance of us beating any of this stuff is at its best. You know what I mean? So if it, let's say you are predisposed to heart disease because your mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, whatever, had heart disease, well, then let's make sure you don't have any other risk factors, right? Let's make sure we go into this as best as we can with the, you know, the best fighting chance. So all these are related, and all of these truly are related to nutrition.
I love that. So yeah, genetics plays a huge role, but you're not saying, if it's in your genes, too bad. There's really nothing that you can or should do about it. You're saying, no, let's reduce your risk as much as possible with these nutrition and lifestyle related changes so that you know you're doing everything in your power to be as healthy as possible.
So I think you and I have very similar approaches when it comes to nutrition and diet, which is you're very compassionate, very understanding. You help the patient walk through at their own pace. That's why I agreed to do this podcast. I said, wow, the way she approaches stuff is very similar to the way I approach things in my office. If I know that somebody has a higher chance of getting coronary artery disease or heart failure, what have you, my tone does change a little bit. I definitely push them a little bit more than I push my other patients, because that's being a good doctor. I'm going to tell you what you want to know, what you need to hear. But if I need to be a little bit strict with you and really change my tone, I do. If you have a family history of heart disease, we're going to really work together. You know, I'm going to really not cut too much slack, because we have to change that. We have the power to change that.
I think it's important to lay all the facts on the table and make sure that our patients, clients in my case, are making the best informed decisions based on their health and their life. So I couldn't agree more. We have very synonymous practice methods, and I think that's what makes us feel like kindred spirits a little bit. So tell us this, what causes or what can contribute to heart disease or coronary artery disease when it comes to food and lifestyle factors specifically, and going back from adolescence, right? You mentioned that's when it starts. What are some things that maybe potentially we want to avoid or monitor that could contribute or increase our risk?
Coronary artery disease is plaque buildup in a way, okay? When people have heart attacks, that's not all just from plaque buildup. So that's why cardiology gets really intense. And again, that's why I go through intense training. We have seen people have heart attacks for all different reasons. It's not just plaque buildup. So if we're going to talk specifically about plaque buildup, you know, that yellow stuff you see on commercials, cholesterol buildup, that you become predisposed to that with high cholesterol or high fat diets can certainly predispose you to building plaque in your heart arteries. Smoking is a big deal. I see people who smoke where that plaque stuff, it's like it proliferates much faster. The other thing is drugs such as cocaine could also really exacerbate that. Inflammatory diseases, which again, not that you don't have any control over, like let's say rheumatoid arthritis or some other inflammatory type of diseases can also make you have plaque buildup a little bit faster than somebody who didn't have an inflammatory disease. Diabetes, if your diabetes is uncontrolled, that's bad stuff because, again, the inflammation in your body that you might not feel. When we talk about inflammation, it's not like, oh, my joints hurt. That's not it. We're talking about inflammation on a cellular level. So if you have uncontrolled diabetes, all that stuff really does impact the plaque buildup in your coronary arteries. When we talk about CAD for short, so I'll call it that, CAD, hypertension, high cholesterol, all our guidelines always start with lifestyle changes first. But as you know, Nicole, like lifestyle changes, it's not just lack of information. There's so many layers of whether that's socioeconomic barriers or just different dynamics. And it's so easy for us to say, eat healthy. But really, there's so many layers behind a person. And that's, again, why I think a health coach is so important. And I'm always trying to connect with somebody who can be like championing for my patients, because sometimes they're not eating healthy, but not because they didn't know what to eat. It's like they're going through so much in their lives. I mean, I'm like thankful that sometimes people come into my office. I'm like, if I was going through all the life stresses that you're going through, I'm like, I would have folded a long time ago. Some of these people are so, so strong, and they need a champion. They need that. I'm fortunate to be able to provide that for my patients. My patient population is fantastic, but I wish I could do more. I mean, I work about 60 to 80 hours a week. So it's hard for me to, you know, and then, you know, I don't want them to keep paying for visits and such, you know what I mean? So what you offer is fantastic because it's like constant contact and emphasize on promoting health. For me, I do the best I can, but there's not more I can do as a human being. So I'm always thankful for somebody who is interested in being a champion for my patients.
So as a public health major, you are just like firing off these synapses in my brain of like, this is why we need to connect as a community so much better. So obviously as a provider, you have a heavy responsibility of, you know, changing your tone and helping your patient to understand just how severe certain consequences can be and what they can do to change their trajectory or their health outcomes. And then I think there's so many, you know, community resources that we need to connect our patients and our clients with, because it can't just be all on your shoulders. It can't be all on any one person's shoulders. I think we just need to give our patients and our clients as many resources as possible so that they have maybe not even just one champion in their corner, but several, because you're right, life is tough. And you, just like I, want to make it as easy as possible. Not that life is ever easy, but to make sure that at least they feel like they have the support that they need while they're going through these tough seasons of their lives. So you shared with us some risk factors, some things that we want to be conscientious of. What about the flip side? What are some of the best preventative measures that people can take in order to reduce their risk of developing CAD? And I know that we've been using this term healthy a lot. So maybe you can just describe and define to us, what does living healthy and eating healthy mean to you as a cardiologist?
Sure. I mean, it's fascinating you say that, because sometimes when I talk about healthy eating for patients, they have their own idea of what is healthy, which might not always be all-encompassing healthy, you know, because people think if you're not eating pasta, they're already doing a good job, they're being healthy. Or if they're not eating fast food, they're being healthy. If they're not eating sugars, they're already healthy. While all those things are certainly good habits, being healthy means so much more than that. To me, what I do with my patients is I try to what I do for myself actually is saying, when I have a plate of food, can I identify what I'm eating? Am I eating as naturally as possible? Or am I eating a lot of processed food? Is there a lot of sauces involved? So I'll give you a fantastic example. And one of the things that we want to talk about is the vegan diet. There are several diets that have been studied by the American College of Cardiology. And if you want to ever, you know, check out some of the resources, you can go on their website. The two common diets are DASH diet or the Mediterranean diet. Both of those diets really do emphasize staying away from processed meat. When we talk about processed meat, I don't think a lot of us realize how much processed meat we really eat. Like if you're eating pepperoni pizza, the pepperoni in that is processed. If you're eating lunch meats, which, you know, a lot of people, including myself, used to think of as a healthy alternative or healthy, easy meal, that's processed. Sausages, you know, there's a lot of processed meat and cheeses, and a lot of these diets do want you to stay away from that. A lot of trans fat, a lot of, you know, processed carbs. The problem is they're everywhere. They're in all the food that we eat. Being healthy is an active process to me. As a busy professional, it's like what I tell people is try to make food at home so you know what goes into it. As I've started cooking myself and following recipes, now I understand why perhaps I wasn't losing weight in the past, because I thought to myself, but I'm eating chicken and broccoli. Well, that broccoli might have had a bunch of butter on it. Maybe that's why it tasted so great, you know? Or maybe that chicken, the sauce that was on the chicken, maybe that was, you know, heavy cream and a lot of cheese. And maybe now I see what goes into making such a meal that tastes delicious, but now I understand the ingredients behind it. So DASH diet, Mediterranean diet, there's also a lot of traction with the vegan diet. I don't go on and tell people to go vegan because I think that's a really, really tough choice. Instead, what I've done, and one of the things I'm so proud of, is my statement is, you know, we always get a side of vegetables, right? It's like you go to a restaurant and it's like, here's a steak, and then you get to pick two sides and it's like some broccoli and like potatoes or something like that. Why is a vegetable a side? Why isn't it equal portion? So when I make food for my husband, again, practicing what I preach and knowing, you know, some days we fall apart and identifying why is it that now we're eating out? Why am I too busy? You know, making health a priority. One of the things I do is I make equal portion chicken and equal portion vegetable. And one of my like favorite moments is when I saw that he went for the vegetable before he went for the chicken. I'm like, yes, I've made a change here. This is amazing. So instead of focusing on like what we can't eat per se, what I focused on is, am I eating enough vegetables? Funny enough, as I was, you know, preparing for this podcast and putting my thoughts together, I was like, man, I really don't eat enough fruits. Like I eat healthy, I do, but some of these diets really, you know, make us want to eat, really do recommend certain amount of fruit. I personally don't eat enough fruit. That's what I realized as I was truly sitting down and saying, let me be critical about my own diet. Where am I falling apart? What's going on? And I don't. So again, fruits, nuts, olive oil is recommended by the Mediterranean diet, and staying away from processed food as much as possible. I think when we make general statements like that, it's almost easy for patients to say, okay, am I eating natural stuff? Do I know what's in it? Look at the, you know, do I know how this was made? And that's one of the easiest ways people can sort of tailor their diet. So that's what I usually recommend.
A whole food diet. Love it. Love it. And I think there's a lot of people out there on the internet who will split hairs and say, well, everything we eat is processed unless you grow it in your backyard. Yes. Okay. We get that. But we're not mowing our lawn while our house is on fire, right? We're focusing on the big picture and we're saying, hey, like, do you know what this is? Do you know where this food came from and how it's going to nourish your body? Or is it filled with artificial sweeteners and 47 ingredients, you know, that was processed in a factory and it's not really going to benefit you in any way besides, you know, adding some sugar or salt to your taste buds? I love that you said that. And I love that you held yourself accountable with that fruit. Look at you. That was a bonus.
I literally was like, oh my God, we really don't have fruit. And my husband's like, yeah, we need to eat fruit. I was like, I can't believe this.
I like to think of it like this. So you referenced the vegan and vegetarian diet. And I asked you that specifically because I have heard from several heart health professionals that cutting out meat is the best way to go. And you have to be vegan if you want to improve your heart health. I, like you mentioned, think that that is a very difficult choice to make. Oftentimes it's not very sustainable for people, nor does it leave everyone feeling great. So what I often recommend, which is basically what you alluded to, is have a primarily plant-based diet. That does not mean that you can't eat protein or that you can't have carbohydrates. By all means, enjoy healthy fats and smart carbs in addition to focusing on lots of vegetables, but make plants the focus of what you're eating, which is essentially what you described when you said you were like plating up just as many vegetables as chicken for you and your husband, which is amazing.
One of the things I realized, I mean, again, I think the vegan community has opened my eyes to a lot of different aspects, but I really don't agree with people who make people feel bad about eating a piece of chicken or eating a piece of salmon. The data does not show that, God forbid, you have a piece of salmon. Actually, the data shows the fish is actually very healthy for heart, especially salmon. But I don't really go for extreme diets, much like you and the way you practice, because I don't want somebody to feel guilty about eating a piece of chicken or fish or even beef or pork for that matter. It's okay to have certain things in moderation. My goal is to open everybody's eyes to what we consider healthy. Is it truly healthy? In terms of the vegan community, you can be vegan and being unhealthy. And I'll give you a really great example. So again, my patients are phenomenal. So some of these people like check their blood pressure and log it, even if they don't have blood pressure issues, which I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. Like, you're involved in your health. Health is number one. This is great. So I have this lady who's like literally panicking and makes an urgent visit with me. And she's like, my blood pressure is in the 160s. And she wasn't my own patient. She was my partner's patient who I was seeing for the first time. So I'm like, I'm like, this is an urgent visit. Like, why is this lady here? She's like, well, my blood pressure is always pretty normal. And I'm like, going through all of her records, I'm like, wow, she's really right. Like, it's usually in the 120s, you know, 110s, and all of a sudden it's in the 160s. And I'm like, well, and she's panicking. And I'm like, well, are you stressed out? Like, because when you have data points that we can analyze like that so close together, when something stands out to be odd, we do go, you're right, this is odd. You know what I mean? So if it's somebody who's never checked their blood pressure and then comes freaking out saying, hey, my blood pressure is in the 160s, 160 is not a panic number to me, okay? Because I see bad stuff. But when she said, but it's always normal, I'm like, my gosh, you're right. Because I see all of her data points for like months on end. It's been normal. So I'm like, just so curious. I'm like, well, do you have a lot of stress in your life? And she goes, well, my kid is home from school. And I'm like, well, there you go. And she's like, but it's not very stressful. I'm like, okay, yeah, I guess we like having your kid at home. That's probably a positive thing, I guess, you know? And then she goes, well, I just became vegan, so I like really don't know why it's so high. And I'm like, oh, that is actually really interesting. Now, why is your blood pressure high? So I asked her, I forget what questions I exactly asked her, but somehow I'm like, are you eating a lot of soy sauce? I have no idea what made me ask her about soy sauce, because like, she's, you know, a lot of American people don't cook with soy sauce, but I asked her that and she's like, yes. And I'm like, what? She goes, yeah, because I'm eating all these vegetables and I don't like the way they taste. So she's been like sauteing vegetables with a ton of soy sauce. And I'm like, oh, well, soy sauce has a lot of salt. And she's like, oh, and I'm like, yeah. So there you go. And problem solved. But I think the funny part about this is, being vegan, I think, is great if you say to yourself, I'm going to eat natural foods. I think being vegan is great for so many reasons, including like, you know, saving animals. My message from listening to a lot of vegan doctors has been, you know, you don't have to eat meat to get protein. I think that's a really important public health message. So I actually start eating meals without meat. Not because I'm trying to be vegan, vegetarian, what have you. I don't label myself as such because I'm like, you know what? I need to be able to enjoy a meal without having a quote unquote protein with it, because you're right. We have been kind of brainwashed to think that way. So let me just enjoy a vegetable bowl of just a bunch of vegetables. Like, I'll make a little rice and then I'll make a bunch of vegetables and call it a day. I don't need a protein in. I don't need chicken in it or beef in it to make it like a full meal. So that's how I've changed my attitude, taking in some of the vegan messages. But I think some people have twisted the word vegan, as in the health industry has really said, oh, vegan, there's a bunch of people who are following this word. So like, let's make everything vegan and then sell a whole bunch of stuff. So one of the best example is like that vegan burger and whatever, what was it called? The amazing burger or something.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about.
And that wasn't very healthy. You know, people are like, but vegan is healthy. So it's supposed to be healthy. I'm like, oh, but like, no, you know, and there's a lot of substitute that I see, like egg substitute, meat substitutes, cheese substitutes. And I'm like, listen, If you feel the need to substitute something because you like it so much, but now you're putting in, I don't know what's processed in there. Now you don't know either. And now we got ourselves a whole other problem. if you like cheese, maybe you should just have cheese. Now, again, if your motivation to go vegan is saving animals, that's different. And you say, listen, I'm motivated because animal rights, what have you, I'm going to be vegan, but I do miss the texture of chicken, whatever. Therefore, I'm going to eat the substitute. I think that's a different type of person than somebody who says, I'm going to be vegan because I heard that's really healthy, yet I miss all these things. So I'm going to substitute, you know, whatever. Because at the end of the day, eating a bowl of rice, beans, potatoes, whatever, it's vegan, but maybe not nutritional and maybe too much carbs. So again, that's why I don't do like a vegan diet per se.
Thank you for sharing all of that with us, because I have seen the exact same thing. I mean, you can be vegan and eat potato chips 24/7 and diet soda, right? Like technically that's vegan. So just throwing a label on something is not how you or I would define a healthy, well-balanced diet. And I think what we are saying for tangible takeaways for everyone listening is minimize processed meats as much as possible. I mean, research does support that. Get more vegetables, eat more plants, and maybe get creative. So if you're eating a lot of meat, minimize the processed stuff as much as possible and maybe choose whole sources like chicken or fish, as we mentioned, but then maybe get creative and try a few meatless Monday recipes and use beans or lentils or plant-based sources of protein instead, because those things can be advantageous as well. Would you agree with that?
100%. I love the way you summarized everything. Perfect.
Love it. Okay. So I have one more burning question for you. And then I want you to tell us where people can find you and learn more from you. Sure. This question, hot topic. I want to know, in your professional opinion, how weight correlates with heart disease. What does the research say about this? Does it matter?
Absolutely. I mean, weight has direct correlation with heart disease. Part of that is what comes with weight, sometimes, again, hypertension. One of the natural ways of dealing with hypertension, for example, is weight loss. I do have a lot of patients who lose weight and come off of their blood pressure medications. So let's talk about drastic weight loss, for example. You know, when, here's an example, it's like someone who gets bariatric surgery, who then end up losing a lot of significant amount of weight. Blood pressure medicines all off. Sometimes diabetic medications come off. What makes me happiest is when I can tell a patient that I'm taking them off of a medication. That is so fulfilling. So weight is related, has a direct correlation with heart disease. Absolutely. More importantly, what I see almost all the time is a lot of this weight that you carry around with you, if you've been carrying that extra weight around with you for 20, 30 years, people start having a lot of joint issues, okay? So I have a lot of patients. When I talk to my, maybe my 50, 60-year-old patients about weight loss, I am not coming from a place of, I need you to drop jean sizes or t-shirt sizes. I'm like, you look beautiful to me, but I'm worried about your knees, because I see this all the time. People who end up needing knee replacement, because it is a lot of weight on your joints. And then comes the knee replacement, infections in the knees, rehab, you know, one factor can cascade into a lot of bad stuff.
And then if you have to get a joint replacement, that's a lack of mobility, right? Or if your joints are painful because of this excess body weight, you're probably less physically active. And we didn't really even touch on how exercise plays into heart health, but I'm assuming you would tell us that it does.
So absolutely. I mean, American College of Cardiology actually has come up with what they consider, the official statement is adults should engage in at least 150 minutes per week of cumulative moderate intensity or 75 minutes per week of vigorous intensity aerobic activity. So as somebody who owns not one, but two Pelotons, but is so busy, there are some days when I just walk on my treadmill because I'm like, okay, I know physical activity is important. I have to do this. So sometimes I'm too tired to run. I'm too tired to do something vigorous, but I'll still go on a walk, and then I'll walk for 20 or 30 minutes or so because I know physical activity is important. I have 90-year-olds, 80-year-olds who don't use a cane or a walker, and they're sharp. They're so sharp and so independent. And I tell them, like, oh my God, what is your secret? They're like, well, I always walk after dinner with my girlfriends. And I'm like, yes, you know? So it's like, you don't need necessarily a personal trainer, but you do need somebody to just champion for you to say, hey, let's go on a walk together. Or like, did you go on a walk today? Somebody to sort of check in with you, you know? So physical activity is 100% extremely important. We all know that it also affects your emotional health, your mental health. So not only just your physical health.
Absolutely. And the more weight we're carrying around, chances are the more limited we're going to be with that physical activity. And I would say that all the things we mentioned previously, getting more plants, limiting processed meat, making sure that you're being physically active and experimenting with some other legumes and things will help with healthy weight loss. So again, we're not recommending crash diets that are just going to get you on that weight cycle process, right? Gain, lose, gain, lose. But we're talking healthy, sustainable weight loss.
Yeah. And I just want to emphasize like why it's important to work with a professional. If I may give two more examples. One is there are some health conditions where you can't eat certain things. So for example, if my mom decides to go read on the internet that kale's good for you, broccoli is good for you. And guess what? If she decides to go on a kale smoothie diet or broccoli only salad only kind of diet, she could actually have a stroke. You want to know why? Because she has what's called mitral stenosis. So she has rheumatic heart disease. So she has atrial fibrillation. So she's on a blood thinner. And that blood thinner gets reversed with excess vitamin K, which is in a lot of green vegetables. So what works for one person would actually like kill my mom. So that's why I always advocate my patients to work with the nutritionist, because you're going to look at the patient and know what to look for and such. The second patient I'll mention is like patients who are on dialysis. So I had a patient who kept coming into the hospital, nearly dying in front of me because the potassium was significantly elevated, because that person was eating a lot of plantains and bananas, which are healthy fruits, right? But not in some cases. So those are two examples where why it's really important to know your health, work with a professional who's going to tailor therapy, you know, tailor their diet to whatever is necessary for that patient.
Don't have anything to add. I mean, you summed that up beautifully. Yes, work with the professional. Nutrition, one size does not fit all. Health and nutrition absolutely have to be individualized. You are preaching to the choir.
I hope your listeners like listening to my patient stories. As you can tell, I'm like, I obsess over medicine. I mean, that's what I did for like, 10 years of my life. So 10 plus years. So where you can find me is healthyhearts.md, which I'm on Instagram. I try to just stick with one social media platform. I've just became very active on it because I've just been, too busy in a pandemic to make cute pictures and captions and such. But I decided, you know, January 1st, 2021, health is going to be number one. That's the message I'm going to keep promoting. So healthyhearts.md is where you'll find me on Instagram.
I will drop your handle in the show notes below because I want people to come follow you. Yay. I always want people to have Instagram feeds that are filled with no-nonsense health and nutrition advice. Exactly. So that they can forget all the other stuff and just learn from professionals like you who are passionate about what they do, but are also giving amazing education, like free value. Why would we not want to see that?
Perfect.
Dr. Fonseca, thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge with us today. I feel heart healthier already, and I can't wait to apply some of these things. And I love your patient stories. So thank you for being willing to share those with us.
You're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Health, Wealth, and Wisdom Podcast. If you like what you heard today, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe, and then head on over to nutritioncoachingwithnicole.com where you can sign up for my weekly emails where I send out my favorite tips, tricks, advice, and support every single Monday morning to help you kick your week off right. Thanks for listening. Until next time.